Good morning. It's Thursday, September 19th. I'm Shumita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, what that Fed rate cut means for you. Medical experts say women are dying in Georgia because of the state's abortion ban. And a powerful labor union makes a surprising choice in the presidential race. But first, to the growing conflict between Israel and Lebanon. Overnight, Israeli airstrikes hit targets in the country's south, where Hezbollah is strong. This follows a second wave of explosions in the country. On Tuesday, it was pagers. On Wednesday, walkie-talkies, killing more than 24 people. The AP was covering a funeral service for victims of the pager explosions when another blast hit. Israel is widely seen as behind the explosions, though it hasn't claimed responsibility for them. But a growing focus on striking Lebanon is in line with recent comments from Israel's defense minister, saying that the military is shifting troops and resources there and getting ready for a, quote, new era in the war. The mass explosions over the last 2 days appear to be targeting devices used by Hezbollah, but they're happening in very public places, like stores and cafes. Experts in international law have pointed out that weaponizing objects used by civilians is illegal. The chief of human rights at the UN is calling for an independent investigation, and UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres was among those warning of the need to avoid more conflict.
Obviously, the logic of making all these devices explode is to do it as a preemptive strike before a major military operation. So, as important as the event in itself is the indication that this event confirms that there is a serious risk of a dramatic escalation in Lebanon, and everything must be done to avoid that escalation.
There's a new reminder this week of the tremendous human cost of these kinds of escalations. Palestinian officials have released the names of more than 34,000 people killed in Israel's war in Gaza. It included 169 babies born since the start of the war. Also, a man born in 1922 who survived more than a century of previous wars. About a third of the names listed belong to children. Now, let's unpack the latest moves by the Federal Reserve and what they mean for the economy all the way down to your wallet. The Fed cut interest rates for the first time in 4 years. Everybody knew that was coming. What people weren't sure about was how big the cut would be. And it turned out the Fed decided to go bigger. It cut by half a percentage point. When inflation started to spike a few years back, the Fed was raising rates, and they stayed up for a while. Chair Jay Powell explained why the bank decided it was finally time to change course.
This decision reflects our growing confidence that with an appropriate recalibration of our policy stance, strength in the labor market can be maintained in a context of moderate growth and inflation moving sustainably down to 2%.
Now, that last part is important. He's talking about the two jobs the Fed has by law: keep prices stable and achieve maximum sustainable employment. For a long time, many economists believed you couldn't fight inflation without hurting the labor market. But that's not the consensus anymore. And in a way, you can think of the Fed's move as saying they might actually be able to have it both ways. They can cut rates in order to keep the job market strong without inflation running wild again. So that's the big picture. As for things closer to your pocketbook, the potential impact of a rate cut is in two places especially: loans and savings. Over time, interest rates to take out home and car loans are likely to go down. That could help some people who've recently struggled to buy homes. The high interest rates of recent years were pretty good for people who put money away in banks. That's now going away, which basically means farewell to all those sweet deals on money market accounts we saw recently. If you chart the Fed's move in recent years, it looks a little bit like a roller coaster. A dive in interest rates to juice the economy when the first COVID lockdowns hit, then up a steep hill as the Fed took aim at runaway inflation. This week's move sends things back downhill. There are no guarantees, but Powell and his colleagues think they can somehow make it a smooth ride. Now to reporting from ProPublica about two abortion-related deaths of pregnant women that medical experts have officially labeled preventable. And that's important because they appear to be some of the first known cases of their kind, where deaths of women were linked to a state's abortion policy. This is in Georgia, where the procedure is banned at 6 weeks. In both cases, the women could not access timely emergency abortion care. Reporter Kavita Serrana told us about 28-year-old Amber Nicole Thurman.
She was a mother. She loved her 6-year-old son.
Thurman found out she was pregnant shortly after Georgia's ban took effect in 2022, and she told a friend it just wasn't the right time for her to have more children. She wanted a surgical abortion, but was too far along to get an abortion in the state, so she left Georgia and was only able to get abortion pills. Research shows that deaths due to complications with abortion pills are extremely rare, but they can happen. Thurman, days later at home, started to bleed and developed sepsis.
In those cases, patients should immediately go to the hospital, where the standard of care would be what's called a D&C procedure to empty the uterus. Instead of providing a D&C to Amber right away, the records we obtained showed it took 20 hours before doctors intervened.
Her condition deteriorated. Her organs were failing. It's not clear why doctors waited to start the D&C, but medical records show the procedure was discussed at least twice. Many physicians fear being prosecuted for certain procedures under current law. Serrano reports the hospital didn't have a policy for physicians on how to interpret Georgia's abortion ban in Thurman's case. A committee of medical experts that reviewed her case later called that out in their report.
They said the main cause of her death was this delay in immediately providing a D&C, and if doctors had done it sooner, there was a good chance of saving her life.
Serrana also told us about 41-year-old Candy Miller, a mom of three. She had lupus, diabetes, and hypertension. Doctors warned her having another baby could kill her.
The maternal death rate for women with lupus is 20-fold higher than those without. But the abortion ban in Georgia, and most of these abortion bans, don't have health exceptions, even for that reason.
When she got pregnant again, Miller ordered abortion pills online. But like Thurman, she needed a D&C procedure.
What we know is that Candy didn't go to a doctor. The understanding in her family was that you could go to jail for getting an abortion. Now, Georgia's laws have ruled in the past that women can't be prosecuted for their own abortions, but that's not what they understood from the headlines, including one district attorney who had said that women should prepare to be prosecuted for abortion.
Miller's family found her unresponsive at home one day. The medical examiner was unable to determine how she died.
The Maternal Mortality Review Committee also looked at this case and believed it was preventable. They said that the fact that she had to make these decisions influenced her case and that she was responding to this legislation.
Medical review committees like the one in Georgia are often roughly 2 years behind the cases they take on, which means we may see more of these cases come to light as experts assess the deaths that took place after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. ProPublica plans to keep investigating. Before we let you go, let's take a quick look at some stories in politics and policy news being featured in the Apple News app. First, it's that time again. We're looking at another government shutdown threat. A House bill to fund the government and avoid a partial shutdown was voted down. Lawmakers have until the end of the month to make a deal. Elsewhere, federal law enforcement say that Iranian hackers stole material from the Trump campaign, and they sent unsolicited emails about the stolen info to people connected with the Biden campaign. Authorities say there's no indication Biden's staff replied. Vice President Harris's campaign says it's cooperating with law enforcement and it did not use any of the material. In other campaign news, a powerful union that has historically endorsed Democrats for president is declining to endorse Harris. The Teamsters leader says it won't endorse either candidate this time, something it hasn't done in decades. He says neither candidate made serious enough commitments on the Teamsters' top issues. On NBC, former President Trump was asked whether the union staying on the sidelines could make a difference in industrial swing states.
I think it will. Yeah, I think so. The Teamsters carry a lot of weight.
At 1.3 million members, including truck drivers and freight workers, the Teamsters is one of the largest unions in the world. And finally, if you are planning a trip abroad, a new move by the State Department might make things a bit easier. You can now skip all the printing and mailing and renew a passport fully online. It's an expansion of a pilot program that's been going on for a little while, and it's expected to speed up the renewal process. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the News app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. Scientific American looks at the power of empathy and efforts to have more of it to help bridge our country's political divides. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.